It's MRCTV's public service announcement with Brittany Hughes and Eric Shiner.
Welcome to the MRCTV podcast. I'm Eric Shiner. Brittany Hughes is still on maternity leave, but joining me today is the one, the only, Gardner Goldsmith. And
hello.
Hey, thanks for joining us, Gard. And of course, you've written a piece that was recently published on the MRCTV website, mrctv.org. Fed court strikes down Obama's EPA's rights-killing waters of the U.S. rule. And this is interesting because it involves some current activity, some history, and some really interesting insights about the EPA. So let's start off with what was this recent court decision and what did it do?
All right. Well, Eric, first, it's great to be here with you. Thanks so much. I appreciate the opportunity. I'm dressed all in green because I am so environmentally conscious.
Yeah, right now. I did know that about you. Yeah.
I know. Remember last time we chatted, I mentioned I was just dressed all to the nines for this classic audio appearance. Well, now people can imagine it's not easy being green, but I decided to go for it. Okay? There you go.
All right. So stop hanging out with Jimmy Valdez and tell me what's going on here.
Yeah. Well, this is very great news for a lot of people. As I mentioned in my piece, the courts have decided to come down in favor of freedom in this case. Shane Trehill reported for Big League Politics that U.S. District Judge Lisa Godby Wood has ruled in favor of 10 states' attorneys general against what's called the Waters of the United States. It's all part of the Clean Water Act, is also known as the Waters of the United States Act. And it basically came around during the Obama administration. And it's one of these things that, as people will see also in my piece, Grover Norquist has mentioned, basically allows the EPA to say that if you've got a body of water that appears because of a rainy night, they can say you've got a tributary to a larger body of water and you can't touch it. If you do anything, they'll fine you. In some cases, as a great example, they'll fine you upwards of $30,000 per day, I believe.
Yeah,
I mean, absolutely crazy. $37,000.
If you don't leave it in its original state. And of course, you know, and if you do want to do something to it, you have to, you know, get environmental evaluations. I mean, there's a lot of aspects to this rule.
Yeah, it's really tough. So it's a good thing to see this ruling, as Big League Politics mentioned, this ruling came not necessarily unexpectedly, and it comes on the heels of something that the Trump administration was already doing starting last year in 2018. The Trump administration ruffled a lot of feathers.
EPA's so-called Waters of the United States rule is one of the worst examples of federal regulation, and it has truly run amok and is one of the rules most strongly opposed by farmers, ranchers, and agricultural workers all across our land. It's prohibiting them from being allowed to do what they're supposed to be doing. It's been a disaster. The Clean Waters Act says that the EPA can regulate navigable waters, meaning waters that truly affect interstate commerce. But a few years ago, the EPA decided that navigable waters can mean nearly every puddle or every ditch on a farmer's land or any place else that they decide, right? It was a massive power grab. The EPA's regulators were putting people out of jobs by the hundreds of thousands, and regulations and permits started treating our wonderful small farmers and small businesses as if they were a major industrial polluter. They treated them horribly, horribly.
If you Google this, obviously Google seems to be very slanted now. You'll find all sorts of reports, and I've got one from USA Today, where the coloring of the language is that the Trump administration is dropping environmental protections because basically they weren't going to enforce the Waters of the United States Obama-era regulation, either through the EPA or through the Army Corps of Engineers, which is also part of how they enforce this.
And this isn't just, you know, this regulation isn't just some regulation on paper that doesn't have an impact on people. I know you point out in the piece, and they were very well publicized at the time. It was a very long legal battle.
Yeah,
Jack and Jill Barron of Idaho, and he was retiring and building on his property.
Oh, it's just, it's such a sad story, really. Compliments to John Stossel for going in with the Reason Magazine folks and interviewing them. And essentially, the human story is, their human story is just one of many of Jack and Jill, of all things. How crazy that they should be named Jack and Jill. And
is that almost as crazy as a judge with the last name of Wood ruling against the EPA?
Yeah.
there's a lot of things going on here. It's very meta.
Exactly. Very, very meta. Yeah, and so they lived in Idaho, in a town called Lamb Creek, Idaho, and they got hit twice by the EPA. So essentially, Town Hall reported, and you can see this in my piece, and thanks to everybody at MRC for doing such great work and so on, and thanks to you for allowing us to talk about this during this very important time to get this information out to people about what is essentially something that should be handled on a local level. Town Hall reported, they say, quote, a blocked drainage ditch caused the area to flood on Jack and Jill Barron's land in Lamb Creek. Jack used his construction equipment to remove the debris blocking the ditch, and the water receded. Then the EPA came in and more or less ruined their lives. The Barrons were targeted by the agency for violating federal wetland laws. The government took him to court for bringing gravel onto his property. God forbid. And Barron won, but the EPA still said he was facing that $37,500 fine per day if he didn't restore the property to its original state. And you can see Jill crying on camera about this. Not that you want to, you know, indulge in someone else's pain, but this is terrible stuff. And it again was flooded due to a blocked drainage pipe. In the end, the retired couple has pretty much lost everything. It's really a tragic thing, and one wonders what the regulatory bureaucrats and Barack Obama are thinking when they're gathering all these laudits and applauding headlines from organizations like USA Today and others saying, oh, they're protecting wetlands, but down on the ground, people's lives are being ruined.
And this also reaches into private property. I mean, this is this person's private property. They were building a home. And in this case, a drainage ditch was blocked. And it's my understanding, too, that the state of Idaho told them to clear the drainage ditch.
Oh, and that's a very interesting aspect. I'm glad you brought that up. Before they did anything, they approached the state. And the state said, yeah, this is perfect. In fact, it was a good thing. We recommend that you do this. They recommended it. Then the feds came and slammed them.
We tidied up the ditches. You can tidy up the ditch, but you can't sidecast. You can't put the dirt that you're taking out back into the ditch. So we stopped doing that. We hauled it away. Anyway, every time we did what they wanted, it wasn't enough. And so they finally came down to the four felony charges against Jack in the criminal court.
This is one, again, of one of the many things of federal overreach where, a rule in paper and the thought process in Washington, D.C. doesn't really work out when put into action on local people's property.
Yeah, you know, Eric, I'm glad you brought that up as well, because there are two lanes to travel here. One is the legal constitutional side of it, and then the other is the local practical side of managing the environment and wetlands and so on and so forth.
Right.
So,
well, everybody wants clean air. Everybody wants clean water. That is a basic argument, and that's absolutely true, of course, in this case of the Barrons. You know, this was a property that was flooded. Nobody was intending to drink that water.
Right, and this is one of the problems that I think people see as one of the reasons why the Waters of the United States policy, which was really a so-called rules change that Barack Obama's administration came up with in 2015, they're always doing this within the EPA. They're never statutory or very rarely statutory. There are these rules changes that the EPA comes up with that affect people's lives on the ground so poorly, even if it was a congressional change. There's a question about that we can discuss later. But this sort of thing brings up the actual on-the-ground workings of how to handle the environment and what can be done best. And we have to question, I think any sensible person has got to question, is it really an efficient way to handle the environment to have some giant organization, which isn't on the ground on the local level, doesn't know these things, is taking money from all over the place and isn't really aware of what that locality is like. I'll give you an example. One of the great things in history that people can look up is a book called The Not-So-Wild Wild West. And it's a book by Terry Anderson and P.J. Hill. And it actually started during the 1970s when Terry Anderson and P.J. Hill, actually from the Department of Economics at Montana State, and Terry Anderson was with the Hoover Institution at the time. In the late 70s, around 77, 78, they published an article, which is available as a PDF, or you can get the larger book. I've got the larger book, and I use it with students. It's great. And they talk about the Wild West and how that depiction is really erroneous, where in the West, they handle things much more efficiently, and we can talk about crime rates and so on some other time, but those are very low, actually. But as far as the environment goes, both Anderson and Hill investigated how the Western territories, California, areas like San Francisco and so on, how they handle water rights without the government getting involved. And it's a great thing to see how people, without the politicians, without the bureaucrats, if they recognize private property rights and the fact that if you're polluting somebody else's water, you could be held responsible, that's all you need. And this is how they did it. It's a terrific exploration of how people who were mining gold had to handle their water rights, because, of course, you need water for gold mining, and people who were raising cattle had to handle their water rights, so you don't want the water polluted for the cattle. People who were growing crops had to handle their water rights. How all these various interests mixed in without the presence of the government bureaucrats, and they managed their system themselves.
Right, they did it on a local level, and people took personal responsibility. And another aspect that I'm going to throw in here in regards to Terry Anderson is, the environmental regulation when it comes to endangered animals and how this changed how people approached their property with the three S's. I'll let you explain this one.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, Eric. That's a great, great point. Yeah, the three S's are something that are well known for people when they look at the so-called Endangered Species Act. And the Endangered Species Act basically inspires people to, before the government can get involved, to essentially kill any of the wildlife that's on the property,
right,
or wildlife
shoot,
that
shovel,
they might worry.
Shoot, shovel, and shut up. That's your three S's.
Yes.
Otherwise, you're afraid the federal government's going to come in. You know, if you see an endangered species, instead of saying, oh, this is cool, I have this endangered animal on my property, you say, I'm raising cattle. I better get rid of this before anybody sees it.
Absolutely, because your land will be made worthless. But it's a perfect example of the unintended consequences of Nixon's Environmental Protection Agency. And, you know, liberals, they hate Richard Nixon, clearly, even though Nixon was the one who basically got the U.S. out of Vietnam, and Nixon was the one who started the EPA. Some people said that he started the EPA as sort of a bone to throw to the leftists out there. And it was started through executive order in 1970.
It wasn't started constitutionally.
No, absolutely not. And even if Congress had established the EPA through some sort of statute that they passed, there are so many problems with the EPA itself and the way that it operates. It's clearly not constitutional. So even if they had passed a law, the problem with the EPA is that it operates outside of any court system for the people it's attacking, which is a huge problem for the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, and the Sixth Amendment. So, for example, the Fourth Amendment, you talk about the Endangered Species Act. Well, when do they have warrants to go onto people's land to find out if they've got endangered species there? They don't get them. So that immediately is a breach of the Fourth Amendment. They're not supposed to be able to come into a search onto someone's property if they don't have a warrant, a public warrant issued by a judge. That's clearly from the founding era. Then the Fifth Amendment against self-incrimination. You're also supposed to be able to have your day in court, a proper system of jurisprudence. None of that is done through the EPA. They just slam people with these regulations. And I know you and I have discussed this before, Eric, and I've mentioned to other people, I know a guy in his 80s who in New Hampshire owned a gas station back in the 60s and 70s, and he hired a company this is, you know, clearly before the EPA, and just as the EPA was starting, he hired a company to handle the oil from oil changes because he couldn't keep it all on his property. He hired a guy to take it away. Years later, you know, he wasn't in his 80s then. Years later, he's in his 80s. He gets fined $30,000 because the EPA said that the man that he hired, the company he hired to take care of the lube oil and so on and so forth, was not disposing of it properly.
Ah.
And they found, yep, they found him joint several liability that he was liable to for $30,000. He's in his 80s. His wife is dying of cancer, and now he's going to pay $30,000.
And I'm assuming he's retired. He's on a budget at that point. And
yeah. And the other thing about this, Eric, is it goes even deeper and farther than the 1800s, where we can see the example from the Wild West and how they handled things locally and so on. It goes back to British common law. And I mentioned to you before, we've had conversations about this, tortious claims. The idea of a tort claim for damage is that a person can, if a person can show the court under British common law that he or she has been damaged, then they can go to court and sue for some sort of a payback from the person who has injured that person, some sort of remuneration. But the thing about it is that it's only for people. So a state is not a person. So anytime the EPA comes out with these fines, there's no person who's actually claimed damages in, well, not every time, but in most cases when the EPA comes down with these fines, there's no person who's been damaged. So it really runs in the face of even tortious claims for damages and property law, which is mainly the reason why they supposedly established the government, to stop people from hurting each other's property and lives.
Right, and it also puts the whole fine system in question. If nobody's been damaged, how do you levy? How do you levy the fine? Well, let's talk a bit about the Trump administration did make an EPA policy change on this regulation. But as you mentioned in your piece, you know, okay, that's good for now. And Trump has put many judges in place. In fact, he already has he announced nominees for two of the four current vacancies on the U.S. appeal courts recently.
Yeah.
So he's really been working to get these vacant court appointments filled with judges that are going to be more in line with his administration. But that really doesn't mean Americans are safe in the long run.
Yeah, excellent point. This is one of the major problems that I find. The problem is the establishment of the EPA. And so, even though this particular aspect of it, the waters of the United States, has been rolled back by Donald Trump, we know the pressures are there to not only bring it back, but to do even more. I mean, look, I'll add to this in just a minute. Here's a great example. This is a caption from that USA Today piece, which came on December 10th, 2018. The headline of the piece is, Trump EPA takes aim at Obama-era clean water rules, comma, prompting outcry from environmentalists.
Wow, that doesn't sound like a slanted headline whatsoever.
No, yeah. And that's
not even
as bad as
aim at Obama.
I know, exactly. It's not Trump-era rolls back questionable or contested Obama-era clean water rules. Trump listens to local concerns, rolls back Obama-era clean water. And the very term clean water rules, again, these have unintended consequences. So as has happened with the Endangered Species Act, many people, before something happens, will do something to the water to get rid of this, to do something to rechannel it. They'll do all sorts of things to get around things before the regulators, so-called regulators, I think that's quite a soft euphemism, will get in and take you know, some chunk of flesh from them monetarily. So here's the subhead to a little video piece that they had here. They said the Trump administration proposed withdrawing federal protections for countless waterways and wetlands across the country Tuesday. No information about the fact that, as Grover Norquist points out, these are places in people's property that if you have a hard rain during the night, the government will claim that the puddle that appeared is part of a tributary waterway. It's insane. It's like something out of Terry Gilliam's Brazil.
Right, but it affects hundreds of waterways, according to the liberal media.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what's interesting is when they say the administration proposed withdrawing federal protections, okay, again, that's a loaded term, and then countless waterways. That ought to be a sign that maybe it shouldn't be the federal government handling these local countless waterways, USA Today. Maybe the people in this central office in Washington, D.C., with all their subhead bureaucrats and little Soviets, should get out of the way and let people and neighbors handle it the way, as Anderson and Lee have pointed out, they handled it out west.
Why has there been such a resistance to letting states handle this on their own?
It's very interesting because there's so much tied into getting the states on board with the EPA. I frankly was quite surprised that these 10 attorneys general fought the EPA Obama era 2015 Waters of the United States.
Really? I mean, it seems like a ridiculous rule. I'm actually not surprised.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting, though, because in a way, I guess you can say that the knife cuts both ways there, because I think you're right. It does seem absurd, but the feds have such strings over states with funding. So, for example, if you look at education, many states, including the state of New Hampshire, complies to federal education mandates, which are patently unconstitutional. The word education isn't even in the Constitution. They conform to those things because the feds threaten to withhold, say, highway funds.
Right.
So if you don't comply, so in order to balance the state budgets, many of the state politicians are, in a way, coerced because they want to make sure they get reelected. If they don't support some particular policy or environmental plan coming into the United States, coming into their state in the U.S., then they might feel like their own political life is threatened because the budget could be affected on the state level. It's really a crazy thing, and it typifies the leftist collectivist mindset, which is that small groups of people can't handle their own affairs, which also goes down to the individual. You're just too stupid to handle it yourself.
Right, yeah, no, you can't handle it on yourself. No personal responsibility. It's got to be a collective.
Yeah, perfectly stated. No personal responsibility. You can't be responsible, but you're so irresponsible, it's okay for you to vote for another potentially irresponsible human being to go into a federal bureaucracy, which is going to get your money whether you're satisfied or not. And then you're going to have to fight over what that bureaucracy is going to do. So we're going to centralize the stupidity. I don't get it.
Centralizing the stupidity. That's a great way to... That covers a lot of federal bureaucratic operations out of D.C.
Yeah, I'm thinking maybe a bumper sticker. Washington, D.C., centralizing the stupidity since 1789.
And on that note, we have to wrap things up. Gardner Goldsmith, thank you for being with us, and hopefully people will check out this insightful piece. It's on mrctv.org. Fed courts strike down Obama's EPA rights-killing Waters of the U.S. rule. Thanks for talking to us about it and giving us a little insight into the history of the EPA here.
Thanks, Eric. I'm green with envy because I am not with you in the offices today, and you got a great team down there.
All right, well, thanks for being with us, and thank you for tuning in to the MRC TV podcast. You can catch up on old podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. Thanks for being with us. Hopefully you can join us again next week.